Welcome back to episode 5 of the Run It Three Ways podcast. On last week's episode, we discussed Callum's race with Olympic gold medalist. But on this week's episode, we may just beat that with Tom running an all-out mile time trial around a housing estate in Wiltshire. How are we doing this week, boys?
All right, boys. Lovely intro, Ben. I enjoyed that.
Thank you. I enjoyed that as well.
Well, that is the highlight of the week this week is your time trial, Tom.
I can't wait to find out about this. I want to know exactly how, because I know how windy it's been in the UK this week, as you guys do. So I'm excited
it's
to
been
find
horrific.
Out.
I don't know what is... I know we moan about the weather in this country, right? But for good bloody reason, I think. Like the last... I reckon since we started this podcast, we've started some sort of weather curse, because it's just been horrendous, I think, for about 3 weeks straight now, hasn't it?
We have indeed. We had sort of the snowy period, then we had the wet period. This last few weeks have been super, super windy. Just can't get a break.
Yeah, it's actually quite funny. Where I live, there's a river that runs through the town, and it's not that funny if you're a local business owner, but it's completely it's completely burst its banks for the first time.
Oh no.
Been here for about 4 or 5 years on and off, and I've never ever seen it like this bad. So it's pretty brutal out there, to be honest. Like it's not great in the UK at the moment.
It's funny you say that, because one thing I did this week actually was watched a new program. I think it was on Amazon. It's actually a film about the in Thailand, those young boys that got trapped in a cave. It's called The 13, and they all survive. So if anyone wants any flood-related content, Unreal Watch is actually really good.
I've seen that as well.
It's really good. It's emotional. It's a good watch.
Yeah, incredibly well done, isn't it, that?
I remember seeing it in the news, but I haven't watched that, so maybe that's a bit of homework for me.
You'll have to get on it, Ben.
Definitely
give us a review next episode. Drop us a review.
What was it called again?
It's called like The 13 or something. Just search 13 on Amazon, you'll find
it. I'll give it a watch.
Nice one. So, back to running.
Yeah, so I suppose I should kick things off then, really, with my week of running.
Yeah, go for it, Tom.
Started off on Monday, as you do.
Good stuff.
Andy started giving me instead of just 5 miles easy or 5 miles steady, it'll be within a certain time. So this was 5 miles in 35 minutes. I was a little bit quicker than that, but you know, with the headwind and tailwind, you sort of get going and look down at your watch and you're running quicker than you anticipated. So yeah, 5 miles, 34 minutes, and then 4x100 meter strides afterwards. Just standard Monday. And then Tuesday for the session, normal couple of K warm up to the housing estate loop. And I had 3x mile, 4x400. So mile, 4x400 times three. 3 minutes jog between the sets and then 60 seconds between the 400s. And this was another one of those where waking up in the morning was very, very difficult. Because it was one of them where you can hear the rain on the window when you wake up, and you can hear the wind as well. And you just know you're going to be in for a little bit of a slog.
Yeah, I know that feeling. For me, though, I just look out the window and think, I'm going to the gym, jump on the treadmill and get it done. But credit for you for getting out there at 7:59 for this one. So even earlier than that for the warm up. So
yeah, a minute earlier than last week's Tuesday session, I think. So it's coming down gradually.
Consistency. It's all about that consistency.
Yeah. And I put in my little Strava thing about the Saw Ultra jacket, just so I remember to mention it. But I think this is one of only two sessions in my entire life where I've kept the jacket on for the entire duration. And I think that the Saw Ultra jacket is probably the only... This isn't sponsored or anything, by the way. It's a bloody good jacket. I think it's the only one that I could keep on for an actual session and feel fairly comfortable in it. If you're looking for a decent waterproof jacket, get one of them, basically.
It is good. I get what you mean. I'm the exact same. I think it's a mental thing, not a physical thing from me, about not wearing a jacket, or like, I'm kind of similar with gloves and stuff. I'm kind of like, right, strip down, get the session done. But
yeah.
I do agree, there's been some times where I've thought to myself, it's actually not sensible to, you know, just wear a t-shirt, for example. So yeah, I've found the Saw stuff really good. To be honest, mainly long sleeves. Like, I never used to wear a long sleeve either, and I quite like doing a session in a long sleeve now. But yeah, the jackets are quality as well.
Yeah, well, this run feels like 3 degrees, and it was about 30 kilometer winds, and it was just, I zipped the jacket off, stashed it in a bush, started jogging and doing some strides, and then just put the jacket back on and thought, I'm just going to keep it on and be cozy for this one. But anyway, the actual session itself, so the mile reps were meant to be about 5:40-ish. So I went 5:48, but I lapped it late on my watch, 5:34, 5:39. And then for the 400s, they're meant to be in and around 80. And I think I probably averaged about 78. Some were a bit quicker in headwind, some were a bit in tailwind rather, some were a bit slower into the headwind. But yeah, this was a deceptive one because on paper, I didn't think it was going to be a particularly big session in terms of volume. But it ended up being 13.5K just for the actual session with the jog recoveries and the reps. And with warm up and cool down, it was over 10 miles for the morning, which is, yeah, it's still not, you know, it's not massive relative to what you guys are doing at the moment or what I was doing before, but it's definitely the biggest volume morning of running I've had for months. So it felt quite good to tick that off. And it was definitely a bit of a slog, this one, just because of the weather and the early morning, but felt pretty good. And it's another one in the bank.
Yeah, no, that's a big session. I think that's a big session for anyone because obviously, like, volume is only one variable in the session, right? The other one's like intensity, and relative to your fitness and coming back, like, it's at a decent intensity as well, especially because you went a bit fast, faster than planned. So no, I think, you know, when you're getting up to 8 miles for a session, including the recoveries, I think that's pretty solid.
Yeah, it's a good level for me at the moment, that I think just enough where you feel good whilst you're doing it and you're not demoralized by how hard it feels, but it's enough to feel like you've done something, like, later that afternoon and the following day. So yeah, the following day was 10K recovery. And I tried to take this as easy as possible. So I got out after work for this one. And it was one of those runs where, you know, I did just plod along. Didn't look at the watch at all. Didn't think about the pace. I think I just had I can't remember what podcast it was actually, but at me Invincibles on and was just jogging along and it felt lovely. So that was just over 10K at 4:50 pace. And then Thursday was again another rest day, just like the last few weeks. And then we're on to the big one, this mile time trial business. So I was originally meant to do it on the Saturday, but I was moving house on the Friday and I had the day off work and I didn't actually have to pick up the keys until about 11 o'clock. So I had time to get out at a fairly leisurely hour in the morning and get a session done. And it wasn't raining and I knew the Saturday would be carnage. So I just swapped the Friday and Saturday around. So
Friday the 13th, you've gone for your first ever mile time trial.
And moving house. Yeah. Nice. So
that's crazy.
A good job I'm not superstitious. but yeah, standard warm up. So a couple K to the famous housing estate, Ben, that you mentioned in the intro. And the aim for this was to do warm up and then 1 mile steady, so about 6 flat. 4 by 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. So just glorified strides, basically. And then 1 mile time trial, followed by, it was meant to be 2 miles steady, but I only did 1 mile, but we'll get into that in a minute. But yeah, I was asking you, Callum, for a bit of advice on this as to, like, how to pace it, because I've never ever done a mile race. I've never done a mile time trial. My fastest mile before this was about 5:03 in my first and only 5K race that I did, like, over 2 years ago. So I had no idea how hard to get out, no idea whether I should be tactical or just get out as hard as possible and hang on for dear life. But yeah, it was good that I spent a lot of time doing some drills and stuff beforehand. So I felt quite nice and loose on this one. And the first mile in 5:52 felt really quite comfy. The strides felt pretty good. And then the mile itself, the time trial, I try not to look at my watch and do this mainly off feel, and get out sensibly hard and then just see, basically just see how I felt as it went on. And ended up running 4:50 is what I lapped on my watch. Strava's been a bit kinder and given me 4:47. Which does sound a lot better than 4:50, but yeah, I'm fairly happy with it, to be honest. Like I said last week, I had no idea what I was going to run for this. I know you boys wrote down a time that you're expecting, and Andy wrote down a time that you'd be happy.
Oh, Andy did as well. That's
yeah, he did.
What did Andy write down?
So I was quite surprised. Normally, he's quite optimistic with time goals. But he wrote 5:09 down.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was quite happy, really, to go. I didn't know whether he would have thought I was going to run like 4:40 low or 4:38 or something like that, and he'd be disappointed that I'd run 4:50, or like what he did, go a bit slower and be happy that I ran as quick as I did. So, yeah,
quick question, Tom.
Go on.
If off the top of your head, I don't know if you know it in miles or kilometers, but your 5K PB, what is that per mile or per kilometer roughly?
It's 3:12 per kilometer. What's that per mile? 5:50 maybe, something like that.
Yeah, because I think that's because a lot of people are not going to have done a mile time trial. It's pretty rare to like do it, unless like in your case you've done it as a training tool. Some people, like, I've raced some miles before and stuff, but I think a good way to have that in your head is in comparison to what you can hold for 3 miles, if you see what I mean, which is your 5K. And yeah. I reckon, what, not exactly, but I reckon the pace that you've run for your mile compared to your 5K PB is not that far off the difference between my 5K mile pace and my 1 mile pace, if that makes sense. So I think that shows how you've done a pretty true effort. It'd be a bit concerning if, say, you'd absolutely blasted something like insane. You'd be like, okay, well, why is your 5K and your 10K stuff like struggling? Yeah. But similarly, if you'd basically run your 5K pace, you'd be like, okay, I've got no other gears. Like, I really need to work on my speed. So I think it does show you're in quite a good position to have like a fair bit of range. Like, you've not, you know, you've not massively shocked yourself, but you've probably run what you should run, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and that's it. Like I say, the weather was far from ideal, so it was really cold again. Feels like 3 degrees and even windier. It was 35.9 kilometer winds for this, which when you're doing like a couple of laps of a housing estate, there was a certain section of it which was just brutal headwind, and my arms were going and like my shoulders were aching. It was horrible, to be honest. But yeah, the actual mile itself, it was just meant to be a line in the sand, like a hard effort. See how much you can push yourself in training and see like how mentally robust I am at the moment, I suppose. And make sure that I'm not just going to like quit when it starts getting hard, basically. And yeah, as I said on Strava, I was making some animalistic noises by the end, which is...
I won't ask for an example.
Yeah, maybe not, eh? But I think that was ultimately the point. So put in a hard, honest effort, line in the sand, and take it and build upon it. So yeah, like I say, I was meant to do 2 miles afterwards. And to be honest, I just felt a bit sick. So I did 1 mile again afterwards, just under 6 minute pace. I could have carried on. But yeah, I was a bit late to collect my keys at this point, and I didn't think it would be best to rock up late to the estate agents and explain it's because I had a lactic headache. so I cut my losses and jogged home, and was quite happy with that for a Friday morning.
Very good effort.
The steady actually is one of those deceiving things where after you do some lactic work, doing something a bit faster than easy pace is actually quite good for flushing out your legs and kind of helping your body adjust to that lactic buffering. So that's probably as annoying as it is, and I sometimes have it in my cool down where it's like, oh, do one of your miles steady. It pisses me off when I read it because I know it's going to be like awful, but it does make you feel better afterwards. So it probably felt better later in the week as a result.
Yeah, it's a weird one as well. It feels like you're jogging when you start. But I was running too quick to start off with on that mile, and I like my chest was tight from that run. Like I felt a bit dizzy and a bit woozy, but the actual pace felt easy, which I suppose it should do, right, if you just run about a minute per k quicker than that for a hard effort. But anyway, that was Friday.
Solid effort. Before we move on, Tom, just quickly.
Yes, come on, Ben.
For the listeners, what time did you write down, Callum?
I wrote down 4:52. That's been evidenced. I sent my notes page over to the boys.
And I wrote 4:51. So
that's a joke.
We clearly got some faith in you there. We were so close to that 4:50, but unlucky, Callum.
What I love about it is Callum was giving it the big one when I messaged in the WhatsApp saying what I ran.
Mate, I can't believe he wrote, like, what are the odds of that happening? Literally, mad, like, 1 second before. But it is right. It's weird that we both picked the same, well, not the same number. You picked a closer number than me. But, like, that's crazy, I thought.
Yeah, we're both very close.
It's good.
I think it's a good sign as well that you've ran quicker than what your coach thought you'd run as well. So I reckon that probably means you're a little bit further along the line in terms of your comeback than maybe you thought you were. Is that fair to say?
I think so. I think I'm definitely fitter than I maybe not should be, but I thought I was based off literally 3 weeks of just very low volume, but some half decent sessions. Like the fitness has just subtly creeped up. And I feel all right. I feel pretty good at the moment. So I know Andy is going to be listening, but let me do more miles, please. This isn't me saying that I love low volume and I get fitter off running less. I want to run more. So just throwing that out there. But anyway, that brings us on to Saturday, which was just an easy 30 minutes, 4:41 pace. Nothing to really report apart from the fact that I felt good. Legs pulled up nicely, didn't have any sore spots or niggles from that mile.
That's always good.
Yeah. And that brings us on to today, Sunday. It was an hour this week. So again, slight increase in volume from the week before. And I did do a loop, which is always nice to see on my Strava profile. Thank you very much. I labelled this one cruisy because it was one of those where you just lock in to a nice little sweet spot where running just feels easy. Like, you know, when you're just covering the ground well, you're running, you know, not quick, but you're not jogging.
Yeah.
And you just feel smooth. Like, stride feels good. No tight spots, niggles. Breathing feels good. And you're not waiting for the run to end. You're almost like you finish wanting to do more. So it's 14.5K in an hour at 4:08K pace.
Solid end to the week, that.
Yeah, that was my week. 68.71 kilometers. So still low volume, but got a nice little graph going on Strava at the moment. So hopefully that will continue to trend in the right direction.
Yeah, keep building.
Absolutely.
Sweet, mate. That's a good week. I think that's pretty solid. Like you said, it'll be good in a couple of weeks. You're racing on the 5th of February, aren't you? So what's that, 2 weeks now? 3 weeks?
Yeah.
3 weeks.
Yeah.
3 weeks. So it'll be good to... You've kind of had a mini race, a time trial, but it's never a true reflection of, you know, exactly, you know, where you're at. Ultimately, you've done that by yourself in not ideal weather. So I'm excited for you to race and have a line in the sand that then you can do all your training based off, you know, knowing what your 5K time or your 10K time, whatever the race is. So no, I think it's going to be good to build up to that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not expecting to set the world on fire with this 10K, but if I can just give it a hard, honest effort, it's a good, like I say, it's a line in the sand. It's a good place to start from and build on into spring and summer and beyond. So yeah, all good.
Good stuff.
How many kilometers again? Sorry.
68 and a bit. 68.7.
Got you. Yeah. Well, Ben, you go next because you've done over double that, I think, this week.
Way to put the guy down, blimey.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a great week, but Ben, you've run double it. So okay. let's move on.
Yeah. More doesn't mean better, does it?
That's true. It's very true. So yeah, my week was 140 kilometers of running this week, which was only 3 kilometers more than last week.
How much of it did you do indoors? That's my first question.
That's a good point. A fair bit, I think. We'll get on to
none of that counts as running because that's the treadmill. So
yeah, that's the treadmill doing all the work.
Yeah,
fair enough. Right, let me just scroll down to the bottom here to take you through my week. Right, so Monday we've got a pretty uneventful 12 kilometers to start the week. Easy pace, 4:40 per kilometer. And I've captioned it, let week 2 of 8 commence in the build to Osaka. I still can't believe I'm running a marathon off an 8-week build. But anyway, we'll see how we get on. It'll be good fun. And then in the evening on Monday, I did my strength and conditioning work and then jumped on the treadmill for half an hour easy. Again, at around 4:40 per kilometre. Another run on the treadmill. Job done.
Quick question. First of all, actually, I'm disappointed in the lack of detail on the weight training.
Yeah.
Strava post. I was hoping to see like 10 times Bulgarian squats with a box full of puzzles like what like Jake Smith. But main question, how do you feel jogging or doing just like a double after doing some strength stuff, do your legs not feel like battered?
Yeah, to be honest with you, legs always feel absolutely terrible after strength work. But I like to get a little run in. It's almost just to like flush out the legs a little bit. Hence why it's always at easy pace, if not recovery pace, just to shake out all the nasties and stuff that's built up across the session. If you do want to check out what sort of strength work I do, I made a YouTube video on it about a couple of weeks back called Strength for Runners or something like that. But I basically just do a circuit type training. So it's like 1 minute of exercise, 30 seconds recovery, and the exercises vary each week. And I do that training session with Meg's cousin Hannah, and we do stuff like squats, lunges, deadlifts, all the basic stuff really, with a little bit of weight in for most exercise. We use the kettlebells quite a lot. So yeah, that's a little bit about the weight training.
Not to outplug you, Ben, but Jake Whiteman started uploading some videos on YouTube, which is great content, by the way. And he's got one from when he's in Flagstaff, and they do a workout, and then they go to the gym. And it's worth looking at the gym segment just to see some of the, like, what I would consider random exercises. That they're very, there's a lot of stuff that's shown that I wouldn't consider traditional exercise, but there's clearly a reason he's doing it. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
for people that maybe are thinking, oh, you know, let me, I want to do something that is clearly proven because the world champion does these exercises, that's worth a little watch as well, because I took a few things from that and thought, okay, he's doing certain explosive things and, you know, incorporated a bit myself. So that's also worth a watch.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. And
just as another one, Stephen Scullion has got a whole series of pretty solid like strength training and core workouts and stuff like that on his YouTube channel too. So watch all of them, but watch Ben's first, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. But I think touching on strength a little bit, it is really important to try and incorporate that into your week. I mainly do it as sort of like injury prevention. I'm not really trying to get really strong or explosive or anything like that. It's just mainly to keep my legs in one piece as I sort of build the mileage in marathon training. I think without that, I'd probably have a lot more issues than I do, touch wood. We could do a whole new podcast on strength and conditioning, couldn't we?
Yeah, because we're all just so big and muscly.
Yeah, we're huge. Got all them gains. Anyway.
Well, I've got gorgeous legs, Ben. I will say
thank
that.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, that got outed on Instagram this week. Shout out to Cole Running. He said, I've got some very nice legs, apparently.
Do you shave your legs?
I do usually, but not in the winter. I just let it all grow out, you know?
Tom, do you shave your legs?
Yeah, I was...
I'm leaving this fucking pod.
Yeah, I do. I do, but only in the summer. Only in the summer as well.
I'm leaving the pod. I'm done. I'm done with this. Not only are you both doing marathons. What are you shaving your legs for?
It just feels good, doesn't it?
Does it? I don't know.
It feels gorgeous. Yeah. What about when you're rubbing in your Pure Sport muscle and joint balm? Do you not catch on all the hairs?
Oh. No, yeah. No, not really.
Foam rolling with hairy legs is just, it's not fun in any way, shape or form.
Give it a try, Callum. Honestly, it's a game changer.
I'm never going to do it. I'd rather just die slow than even try and get the marginal gains of shaving my legs. It is what it is.
Fair enough.
The worst part is if you like nick your shin. Have you ever done that, Ben? Have you ever cut your shin whilst you're shaving your legs? That's painful.
I can't say I have, to be honest with you.
No. Oh, I ran London Marathon. Ben's big time.
He gets a wax, I reckon.
Full Brazilian.
Yeah, exactly that.
Right, let's move on, please.
Okay, on to Tuesday, blimey.
Only on Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah. My first double threshold day of the week. So we've got two runs to dive into here. The first one is 2x15 minutes at threshold pace with 2 minutes recovery in between. The weather obviously wasn't looking good this day, so I've jumped on the treadmill down in the gym, much to Callum's dismay. And I've even plugged the little podcast on here. So this must have been when last week's episode came out. I think we were a little bit late to record that one. But anyway, I was wearing the Puma Fastar. I actually really enjoy that shoe, especially for these sort of paces. It's just a fun poppy shoe. So I've worn carbon racing shoes on the treadmill. What are your thoughts on that, Callum?
Listen, when I say that, I don't like the treadmill. I've got no issue with the treadmill. We'll move on from it.
Okay, move on to that. To the evening session then. It is 8x1 kilometer again at threshold pace. Nice and interesting. 90 seconds recovery. I did this one with Luke, so I've even got a little video on this session here. So yeah, I've said here, big kudos to Luke for dragging me around. I was feeling a little bit rough actually on this session. It was one of those I just wanted to sort of tick it off and move on to the next one. But we actually got going pretty well. We averaged 317 per kilometre for that effort. And for my current...
Sorry, Ben, really quickly. Yeah, no worries. I've seen the video. I don't want to make your week going forever. This is a question as someone who doesn't wear glasses. When it's raining, do your eyes not get really steamed up or like the glasses get really wet and you can't see where you're going?
Yeah, so that is always an issue, to be honest with you. And I usually wear contact lenses, but I'd actually forgotten for this session. And yeah, if you look at the second video on that post, the wind and the rain for that one was absolutely horrible. But we managed,
you might get a dead fly. You might get a dead fly on your glasses and your windscreen. It'll be in your eyes all the way.
Proper training, that is.
It is indeed.
I love these videos. It's good to see.
Should have been on the treadmill, really, shouldn't I? Out there in the cold, blimey. and that takes me on to Wednesday. So this was a pretty uneventful 30 minutes on the treadmill. I had to wait 10 minutes to get on the treadmill at the gym. I had a busy day on Wednesday, so I didn't actually run in the daylight. The majority of my running that I do on the treadmill is because of where I live. And I can't really run in the dark unless I invested in one of those little light thingies that Callum has. But this day I actually had, I think 12 or 14 kilometers in plan, but I started running and I was just feeling really, really heavy legs from the two sessions on Tuesday. So I decided just to call it after 30 minutes, which for me is pretty good, to make that sort of sensible decision. I usually would just train through it and then probably turn up to the next session feeling a little bit sore. But that takes me on to Thursday and I was actually feeling pretty good. So I'm glad I sort of took that Wednesday as a proper recovery day there, just 6K. And then on to Thursday, my second double threshold session of the week. Again, on the treadmill, more super shoes, this time the New Balance SC V3, which I think you picked up this week as well, Kyle. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. I was kind enough to get a little delivery.
Little cheeky delivery from ProDirect.
Yep.
So yeah, this was another session, 323 per kilometre. And this one here I've called the best session of the block so far. So bearing in mind, I'm only 2 weeks in. But yeah, just felt smooth throughout. I've written here that I could have doubled the volume of the session, which for me is a really good sign that I was in the right sort of zone for that threshold. Just felt smooth throughout. And I thought this was the first day where I finally felt like there was no issues in terms of breathing or, you know, anything like that I've had from the flu from the last few weeks. So that's a good sign. Finally starting to get better from that illness period and starting to feel like myself.
Treadmill wise, Ben.
Yeah.
I like treadmills, but my only issue with them is how much they vary from one to the other. So I've done sessions on a treadmill where I have to max it out at what is apparently 20 kilometers an hour, but it definitely isn't.
Yeah.
And on the other side of the spectrum, I've had treadmills where it just feels way, way, way quicker than what it feels like outside. Do you go on the same treadmill at the gym every time or do you just not care and you're not fussed about whether it's perfectly calibrated or not?
Yeah, so I actually do use the same treadmill in the gym just mainly because the one I use has got a better view of the outside, so I can just watch the cars and people going past and that sort of stuff. But I also train to sort of effort and threshold. So I'm often looking at my heart rate for these type efforts. So if, for example, on the first rep, my heart rate is a bit too high, maybe the treadmill was calibrated a little bit wrong, I'll actually bring the pace down a little bit just to make sure I'm in the right zone. So because I'm training more to effort, I'm trying to just match the threshold effort that I do that I run outside. So in terms of pace, even if it's not quite right, it's more of an estimate, then it doesn't really affect my type of training too much, I wouldn't have thought.
Fair enough.
But yeah,
I'm zooming in on this picture as well that you've posted, and for someone who doesn't shave their legs in the winter, they're still very smooth, Ben.
I know, mate.
You are blessed. You are blessed.
I'm not a very hairy man, I must admit. So it doesn't make much difference.
Thursday evening,
threshold number 4 of the week. This time I went down to the track and my teammate Joe had a mile sort of cut down workout planned. So I decided to jump in with him. Joe's just coming back to a bit of fitness himself, so it's quite nice to jump in with him on his sort of speedier work. He's an 800 meter runner. So this session for him is sort of is more bread and butter for him. It's nice to always share the track with somebody rather than just doing my session myself. So I've called it a threshold, but in reality, it probably isn't really threshold effort. It's a little bit higher, but it's sort of sandwiched with a threshold either side. So let me just quickly talk you through it. It starts off with 1600 meters or a mile, then 2 minutes recovery. Then we do 2x800 with 90 seconds, 4x400 with 60 seconds recovery, and then 8x200 meters with 30 seconds recovery. And then finally, I did another threshold just to top it up to 8 kilometers of 1600 meters to finish. And that was a really good session. The first rep for threshold was 5:20 for the mile, and then I finished with a 5:08. And we progressed through the session really well, sort of picking up the pace as the sort of reps got shorter. So I think we were averaging about 2:30s, 2:32s for the 800s, 71s for the 400s, which is around my, or just slightly quicker than my 5K pace when I'm fit. And then the 200s are in around 32 seconds, which for me is very close to sprint pace. I'd probably say that's about 80%.
Mile pace, maybe?
Yeah, mile pace. Well, maybe a little bit faster than mile pace. Just trying to keep up with Joe, to be honest with you. But I think, yeah, a good thing to note about threshold running is you do have to keep it pretty sort of, you put a lid on it, basically. If you push it too hard, then you basically are going to overdo it a little bit. But I find with the Thursday evening session, because I'm looking ahead at the week after this session, I've got 2 days of sort of easy recovery running. So I can push this session on a little bit if I'm feeling good, because I've got another 2 days of sort of easy running before my next session, if that makes sense. But that was a good session.
And I mean, looking at this brutally as well, it's like, you're getting your threshold stimulus. I get that from the mile at the start and the mile at the end, but ultimately it's not traditional double threshold in the sense that half of the volume you've done, or maybe even 2/3 of the volume that you've done, is at, you know, 10K effort, 5K effort, mile effort. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So you are like, I'm not saying it's a negative thing that you've done, but just for the sake of saying like, oh, you've done double threshold, you haven't really as such, have you? You've done a double session day and two really good sessions.
Yeah.
I think the important thing is that in the morning you didn't overcook it, which meant that in the afternoon you could actually do this session well. Because if in the morning you just nailed it and gone, oh, I feel great, let me do 10K pace, there's no way you're coming back in the evening and running the paces that you did. So
no, and when I was on the treadmill in the morning, I was so tempted to whack it up a little bit because I was feeling so good. But I thought, no, I've got another session later. If I'm still feeling good, then I can increase the intensity a little bit. And I'm glad I did that. I also think as a marathon training, getting that little bit of anaerobic work, so those 200 meters is good for me in terms of working on efficiency and stuff. I don't really need to do too much of it. So it's something I probably would only do maybe once every 3 weeks, this type of session, just to really get the legs turning over. But it was a good session, and really enjoyed that one. Again, conditions were not great, but that's what it is at the moment, isn't it?
Mm. It's a lovely session, this. I absolutely love these like pick and mix type sessions where you're not just doing 5x1 mile or 12x400. You've got all sorts of different paces and different rep lengths and stuff in there. It just keeps it, I don't know if it's the same for you boys, but it just keeps it interesting, and it makes the session go so much quicker, I think, if you're mixing it up from one rep to the next.
Yeah, for sure.
Nice.
And that
good day, that. Very good day.
Yeah, it was a really good day. I think it was around 30 kilometres of running, which back in peak training, that was the usual for these double threshold days. So it's nice to be finally getting back to some sort of volume there as well. Moving on to, what day would this be? Friday. I went out for 20 kilometers at an easy pace. So that day was 4:44 per kilometer. Just plodding along. Had a good podcast on again. And I've got here in the description, my right calf was a little bit tight after the 200. So towards the end of this run, there's sort of quite a big hill. And I just noticed on this hill, the very top of my calf was feeling a little bit tighter than it would. So just put that in the notes there. And the purpose of this run is, although it is 20 kilometers, it's not really a long run for me in terms of, I don't get the same benefit from this run as I do my long runs, just because of the intensity is a little bit lower. It's good to get some volume in, but it is just easy pace. So I wouldn't necessarily call that a long run for me in terms of that sort of category, if that makes sense.
Just time on feet, isn't it? Like building up resiliency for when when your legs get tired in the marathon, you're going to have to, you'll lean on little runs like that where you're just out for a decent amount of time, just running easy.
Yeah. And that's exactly why I do it. I probably could have done two sort of double run day that day. So 10 in the morning, 10 in the evening. But yeah, sometimes getting the full 20 kilometers in one run is actually more beneficial for marathon training. Like you said, working on tired legs. But taking myself on to Saturday. So as the calf was a little bit tight the day before, I woke up and thought I'll do a park run with my little sister. So instead of thrashing it around at my local park run, I just jogged around with her. That was really nice wholesome content there. Me and my sister just running the park run in 28 minutes and 28 seconds, so about 3 minutes off her PB. So it was an easy run for her as well, and a solid 5:40 per kilometer average for me. Just 5k for the day on Saturday, looking ahead to my Sunday long run, which is today. And I ticked off 30 kilometers this week, which is good. 2 kilometers more than last week, and I've got here 3 seconds per kilometer faster pace wise. And that's in for the same effort, which is, yeah, really good. Nice to see that the fitness is trending in the right direction. I'm hoping to get these long runs down in pace to around, well, a little bit closer to marathon pace, probably somewhere between my threshold and marathon pace, before going out to Osaka. So it's good to see that one trending in the right direction. And just for those who are interested in heart rate, I try to keep these between 150 and 160 beats per minute. So it's sort of like a just below tempo effort, steady, high, steady pace. And that's, yeah, that was feeling really good. It's nice to keep a bit of a lid on it as well and not absolutely thrash it and then feel crap going into the next week. So yeah, finished this run feeling pretty good, fueled it really well. And yeah, have hopefully come up quite well from that one. But yeah, that's my week.
What I really like about this long run, Ben, is I remember last week on your long run, I questioned your first K being 3:30. And you mentioned you're a bit nervous before because of the niggles that you had with your first proper long run. You'd done some activation in the kitchen and stuff beforehand, which might explain it. So this week you've really dialed it back and you've started with a 3:42 kilometer.
that is downhill, I promise you.
you mentioned nutrition as well. Did you take anything, you said you fueled this run well, did you take anything on board during the run itself?
Yeah, so for this run I really focused on practicing race day nutrition. So beforehand I had classic toasted bagel with jam. I had a 30 gram gel before and some of these little chews. They're from a company called Precision Hydration, which hopefully I may be working with them a little bit more in the future. So it's nice to try some new products. And I also took some electrolyte tablets, which I've not ever had before, to be honest with you, but they've got a real high concentration of sodium that supposedly dissolve and then throughout your run sort of top up the sodium levels that you're losing, which worked really well. Didn't have any cramping or anything like that. Today was quite a cold day though, so I probably wouldn't naturally lose too much in the form of sweat just because it was a little bit colder out there. And then on the run I took another gel at 45 minutes and then a caffeinated gel at an hour and 45 minutes, sort of just trying to practice my marathon fueling, which is that's probably a similar sort of strategy that I'll use in Osaka. Maybe a few little tweaks here and there, but finish the run with still plenty of energy, which is always good. So I think, in terms of fueling today, I pretty much nailed it. So we'll continue practicing and trialing new bits moving forward.
What a lovely loop as well, by the way, Ben. I just have to say that before we move on. That looks lovely on Strava.
It is a really nice route, actually. I was thinking that as I was running today, how lucky I am to run out here in the countryside. These are mainly sort of like single track roads, so you rarely see any cars, a few cyclists. I don't think I saw any runners today. That's quite normal for me though, in these sort of like country lanes. There's not really much going on, but more wildlife and cows and stuff like that than people, which is always nice.
If you turn it sideways, it looks a bit like a dinosaur as well.
Oh yeah, I do see that.
So there you go, people. If you've not got anything to do when you're listening to this, just go on to Ben Strava, turn your phone sideways and tell us what you can see.
Callum, what did you see? You've written in the comments here.
Yeah, I think it looks like, well, I put it looks like the UK. Someone's gone, oh, wait, it doesn't look like the UK, does it? Because Northern Ireland's not on there. Yes, I'm aware of that. It's obvious what I meant, isn't it?
Yeah, that's brilliant. Maybe I'll get Northern Ireland on there as well.
Yeah.
For next week.
I know. Next week.
As I build it up, I'll try and add Northern
Ireland. Sorry to anyone that's been offended there by me, by the missing them off, but it happens.
Next Sunday, Ben, do 35K and just make sure you add Northern Ireland, will you?
I will
do
that.
You'll have to stop your watch while you get over there so you don't have a red line, though.
That's true. That's true. Okay, right. Shall we move on to some running news?
Whoa.
Oh, yeah, Callum. God,
we're on the Benny's running show here, right? I'll get through my week nice and quick. Don't worry, folks. Monday.
Sorry, Callum. Sorry, mate.
Monday, Monday, I started with a rest day. So that's a good start to the week. You can see this is going to be a fast one. I raced on the Sunday. A pretty tough race in Spain, so we just decided just to have the Monday off. I was traveling back all Monday anyway, so didn't really make sense to run. Tuesday I went out and did 8 miles. This just pissed it down from start to finish, I'm pretty sure. It was one of those where I don't think it rained for the full day, but the hour that I decided to go out, it rained for the full time.
Which, it's always the way, isn't it?
You know, it wasn't that enjoyable, but I actually felt pretty good. I'd had the day off the day before, so I always feel, don't know about you guys, but I always feel pretty motivated like the week after a race, whether it's gone good or bad. I'm always quite like ready to get back and do some more training.
Yeah, 100%.
It's also going to be a while until I race again. So I kind of don't have any pressure on my body needing to feel good or like anything like that. I can kind of just train how I want to train. And if I feel battered, I feel battered. It doesn't matter because I'm not going to race, you know. So it's kind of nice just to go out, do the training, get it done. So yeah,
solid quote in the comments as well. Live like a monk, train like a dog. I like
yeah,
that.
Straight out my brain. That
12
one,
likes,
12 likes, baby. I've made it right. Wednesday, so that was Tuesday. Wednesday, this was a double, I believe. Yes, it was. So in the morning, I went out and did 7.73 miles at 6:43s. Basically, as I've explained previously, when I have a double, I just split the double however is most convenient for my day, which is normally doing a slightly longer one in the morning and a shorter one in the afternoon, just because that's how I prefer it. So that was pretty nice. That was actually quite sunny, surprisingly. And in the evening, I ran with my girlfriend Alice, did 4.81 miles at 8:40s, so nice and steady. And yeah, nothing really to report on those two, just ticking away nicely.
Longer than intended. What are you referring to there?
The run,
of course.
Yeah. So I think if you add those two numbers together, they're probably slightly above 12, I reckon.
Yeah.
And I think I had 12 for the day. So I think that's why. I think I was supposed to do something like 8 and 4, and it's ended up being, you know, a bit more than that. But not to worry.
With your training, Callum, is it like with Tom, does your coach send you sort of like a rough thing every week of what you've got to follow in terms of the training?
He sends me the exact thing. No paces in terms of like he's not going to tell me what to run an easy run at, but he sends me the exact for everything. But
right, okay.
We just have a relationship that's collaborative in the sense of I understand that if I'm a bit tired and I do a mile less, or if I've got a commitment in life that means that I have to move something, then I can move it and it's not the end of the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
As we get the sessions, I'm a bit more tight with, and when it gets to the summer and it's more middle distance stuff and kind of like a second per lap is a lot compared to winter when a second per lap is nothing.
Yeah.
That's where I really do listen to him. And if he says like, okay, you need to close in 14.5, then I'm looking for 14.5. I'm not going to be happy with 15, if you see what I mean.
Yeah,
Now, if he says run a 32 and I run a 31, it's not a big deal. So yeah, that's pretty much how it works.
Right.
Nick, if you're listening and that's not how it's supposed to work, sorry, but that's how it's going.
Does he listen to the podcast like Andy?
He doesn't. He's
a busy man.
Not. He probably I don't know what he's doing, but he ain't listening to this shit. Let me tell you right, Thursday. I actually did a session on a Thursday because my week was all a bit shifted around. I only had one session this week, really. So session on a Thursday. After the warm-up, it was 4 sets of 4 300s, so 16 300s, basically. On the track with 100 meters jog in between. These were supposed to be 47-48. They were actually 47-49. Mixture of probably the wind and maybe being a bit tired. I don't know. But they all felt pretty controlled. The 100 jog is about 35 seconds. So it kind of just turns into a bit of a fartlek, really, where you're kind of running for, you know, 50-ish seconds, and then you're off for 35 seconds, and then go again. And then between the sets, I had 2.5 minutes. So for that, I normally do kind of like one lap jog, and then just tack on a few seconds for however long it is, or get back to wherever I need to start. So that was a pretty good session, actually. I was by myself, and, you know, it's one of those where it's not too hard in terms of the breathing wise. You can really easily catch your breath between the reps, I find, at that pace. It just starts to fatigue your legs slightly because it's a bit faster than the stuff I've been doing throughout the winter. But that's why I'm doing it now. So in the summer, it doesn't come as a shock, really, just a bit of speed economy stuff.
Yeah.
And with the paces there, how does that sort of equate to, is that mile pace or?
No. So mile pace is like 44 point something a lap, I think.
Right, okay.
A 300, sorry, because that would be, what, 60 seconds a lap.
So 3K pace, maybe?
Yeah, so I think if you go through in between 47, 48, I think that's the equivalent of running a 64, which is 8 flat for 3K, and I've run 802. So yeah, it's about, I'd hope to go under 8 now. So yeah, it's about 3K pace for whatever 16-300 is. Don't know what the volume that is, but yeah, it's pretty... It's a pretty tame session, to be honest, but it's also very useful to do. So, yeah, that was a pretty decent one. Slightly longer cooldown just to get a bit of mileage in. And then Friday, I had another double. And contrary to what I said earlier, I actually did this the opposite way around. So I did the shorter one in the morning with Alice, 4.92 miles at 8.59s. This was terribly windy, this one. This was early and windy, two of the worst. Probably the worst combination, really, of things you can get.
40k, 40 kilometer an hour winds. Ugh.
Is that what it's telling me?
Yeah, horrible. That's what I was saying. That is grim.
The watch doesn't lie. There you go. So that's the morning. The afternoon, I had 6.66 miles, the devil's number, at 7.02 per mile. And I've put here that the run was hampered by a later than planned plate of eggs on toast. So I'll tell you what happened there. So let me just think about what day this was. So this was Friday, wasn't it? So yeah. Friday, I've got up early with Alice. I've gone and done the run. And then I've come back and, you know, I don't know about you guys, but when I've got stuff to do, I just want to get it all done. So I had a to-do list of things and I've sat on my laptop and I've started doing this, doing that. I've, you know, gone to post this letter. I've done all these things. And I'm in the flow of ticking off jobs. So I've kind of forgotten, like, that I need to eat my lunch. But then it's dawned upon me that me and Alice were going out for dinner in the evening. So I had to get my run done in the afternoon pretty much. So then I was stuck with, okay, I can't have a normal lunch that I would have, you know, like some chicken, some pasta, whatever, because there's no way that's diet to get the run done. But I still need enough calories because I'm not eating till late tonight. So I thought, right, eggs on toast, that's fine. But I went a bit too large, and I think I had 4 pieces of bread and 5 eggs.
Wow.
That's quite a big portion for me. I mean, I normally, the eggs is normal, but I'd normally only have 2 pieces of bread. So I think it was the bread that did me in. So anyway, got out for the run, and honestly, the first 2 miles, I felt absolutely clapped. I was like, it was terrible. I was like, I felt like was it what you guys must feel like when you'd got 2 miles left in a marathon. My stomach was like, it didn't feel like I needed to stop and have a shit or anything. I just like had a pain there. Yeah. It was almost like a stitch. It wasn't great.
Just the food hadn't quite digested and just sitting in your stomach.
But by the end, honestly, I think I sped up the digestion because by the end I felt great. Last couple of miles, it was like it passed. It was fine. So
I had the exact same today, actually, with I ate a chili at lunch about 2 hours before the run. Like, and I went to town a bit with it and I knew it was a bad decision. But like you, Callum, for the first few miles, all I could taste was this chili, and it wasn't very nice the second time around. But by the end, I was absolutely flying. So,
is that a chili con carne, Tom, or an actual chili?
Yeah, like a chili con carne, like
right, I got you, got you. Yeah,
great meal, by the way.
Yeah, quality meal. I just had images of you just eating a chili just before your run. I was like, yeah, that probably won't help, mate.
No, that's me. Yeah, ghost chilies before every session. Trust me. But no, I'm with you, Callum. You feel terrible to start with, but then sometimes you come around. You either come around or you end up in a bush. You got the better of those two scenarios there.
Yeah. And I've also just realised while you guys were talking, I was thinking, we had the shopping coming the next day, right?
Oh, and here we go.
We didn't eat many eggs this week, so we had loads of eggs left. So I remember thinking to myself, hang on a minute, we've got some more eggs coming in the shop, so I better get through a good few eggs here. And that, I think that's why I had five. I remember now, so that'll be why anyway. Cool. So Saturday, which was yesterday, the day of recording, I did 15.37 miles at 6:53, which was bang on an hour 45. The run I was given was 16 miles, so I did slightly shorter than given, but that's where the two loops took me. I didn't really enjoy this one, to be honest. The first half was great. Alice came on the bike with me and we just kind of chatted and it flew by. And then I made the mistake of normally I'll do one big loop for my long run. So once you're out, it's kind of like, right, well, now you've got to come back. You got no choice. But because Alice needed to get back for netball, big up the Rockets, by the way. Great game. Great game in biblical rain, I heard. It was a 2-point finish. But anyway, I did one loop to come back to our house to then go and do another loop. And the demoralizing feeling when I got back and realized that I almost had half of the run still to do was just, it wasn't great. And I've not done a real long run like this for a while. So I was kind of like, oh, bit of a slog, not too much enjoyment, but hey ho, got it done. And I know it's important for me because I never used to do long runs and I wasn't very good. And then I started doing long runs and I got a lot better. So I know I've got to get them done. And I had zero heart rate, as four people have commented. Three people have commented, sorry, that my heart rate was zero. So yeah, it was. I was dead while I was running. Thanks.
Brilliant.
For your time.
It started at five, though. That's what I like about it.
Oh, it started at five, did it? Oh,
yeah. The first K, five beats per minute, and then just drops to zero.
I got carried away.
Oh, that's good.
I can definitely relate to that, though. Running past the house is never a nice feeling when you've got more running to do, especially if it's over half of the run. That sounds horrible.
I'm never doing it again.
No. It's just what your brain does, though, isn't it? It tricks you into thinking, like, before, obviously your circumstances were different, but when I've done it, it's like, in my head, it's, oh, it'll feel quite nice if I do a loop, and then I end up back at home, and then I've just got to do another little loop afterwards. But every single time you run past your house, it's just pure dread.
Yeah.
No matter how much you've got left to do, whether it's 3K or bloody 30K left, it's awful.
Major regrets, but at least the run was done Saturday and got it out of the way. So that meant that today, Sunday, I just had 3.5 miles, literally just an easy shakeout at 7:11 per mile. So again, just nice and easy. And I've got a bit of a bad hip, actually, which I think it started to hurt a little bit on the long run. I didn't really think much of it. And I think I've just strained it a little bit and it feels like my nerve might be pinching. I think it just, my hip flexor's a little bit inflamed, I think. So, you know, when you get a bit of a pain down your leg, not as severe as your gammy leg issues, Tom, but kind of a bit of an issue. So when I was running today, I thought, better be careful this week with it because you don't want to put yourself in a hole with injuries like that. So
yeah, I've been
doing all the obvious things. And tomorrow when I go out in the morning, if it hurts a little bit, then rather than just run through it, I'll probably just not do a double and I'll just cross train in the afternoon and do bike or elliptical or something instead. And then, you know, assess it the next day. But it's not too bad, to be honest. It's just one of those things that kind of gets in your head and you think, oh no, an injury's coming, or what shall I do? And then, you know, what would I tell an athlete to do right now? And should I run through it? But yeah, I'll be fine. So yeah, pretty decent week. 61.2 miles, which I think is around 97-98K. For you freaks in kilometers. Pretty good week.
Solid week. Yeah, I think it's important to write that your hip wasn't feeling great there, because I feel like if you write in your Strava description, then you've almost like held yourself accountable a little bit. And sometimes we can just train through stuff and just ignore them. But now you've written it there, at least you've acknowledged that. And going into next week, you can sort of, keep an eye on it. I think that's good.
If I smash my training this week and then next week I say, oh yeah, my hip's bad, I've had to have 5 days off, then we can literally come back to this and say, well, you identified it 7 days ago. Like, what have you done? So, fingers crossed that doesn't happen. But if it does, then, you know, you live and learn.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Second time round. Should we do a bit of running news?
Yeah.
I think so.
There's a chunk to go through here, isn't there?
There is quite a lot to go through, yeah. And I was saying just before the podcast, like, it's amazing how much, like, news in the running scene actually happens throughout the week. I don't know if it's just since we've started doing a podcast, but yeah, there's a hefty amount here to go through. What should we start with?
I think Valencia's got to be the obvious thing. When I put out on the Instagram about things that we should talk about, a lot of people wanted to mention the start line drama at Valencia. So without going into a million details. If you didn't see, you should look it up on Instagram. But there was a massive pile up at the start of the Valencia 10K this morning. How it started, but from what I've heard from people speaking, it's kind of just everyone rushing at once. It's such a race populated with fast runners, knowing that they want to get a fast time, and running, you know, everyone prioritizes themselves, that you want to get out hard, and if one person falls over, then it just means everyone behind you falls over. So it'll be interesting to see if they get into any trouble in terms of like their licensing and things. With
they must do, like, surely, because there were some pictures we saw. Even Josh Lunn posted a picture of his knee, and it was pretty
mashed up, wasn't it?
Yeah, six or seven people on top of him. And I think also I saw a few things circulating that there were one of the main issues was like the lack of what do you want to call it, like segmentation of the waves. Yeah. So there are like 34-minute 10K runners pushing themselves forwards to run with guys who are trying to run 29:30 or whatever. So there weren't enough like brackets, which you've got to think that's going to be carnage. You've got people flying out, and then people who are running out considerably quicker. You're obviously going to have people falling over.
A really good video. I don't know if you've seen the video of Jimmy Gressier stood next to the guy that runs, like, put his finish time on, and he's still fast. He still runs sub 31, so he's still a fast runner. But Jimmy Gressier is night professional, went through 5K today in 13:31, like absolutely rapid. And they're on the start line together, and this guy's pushing Gressier to get in, and he's literally looking at him like he wants to just smack him in the face, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it is those sort of things that end up causing problems.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully nobody got too badly injured from that one. And yeah, hopefully we see a bit of an improvement next time, because you never want to see that at the start of a race. People like pushing around each other and trampling on everyone. I know everyone wants to get a PB and stuff, but when things like safety come into it, I think they take priority, really.
I just think as well, like, you think how many people's races would have been ruined by that, and the amount of people who have paid like their own way, they've paid their own flights, they've done, you know, X amount of weeks of training in the build-up to it. They're obviously going to Valencia to run fast. You're not going there for like a fun run necessarily, right? Unless you happen to be on your holidays. So the amount of people who must have just not been able to finish or got like severely compromised by that fall, just sucks really, doesn't it? If you paid all that money and done all that training. So hopefully they can sort it out, and hopefully we see some sort of press release or information on what exactly went wrong and what to fix it.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll quickly go through the 1-2-3 on the men's and women's side. So for the men's, we've got three Kenyans on the podium. Weldon Legat ran 26:55, which is pretty damn rapid, but all things considered, I think it's about still 30 seconds off the world record. So maybe not quite as quick as they'd hope to go out in the men's race. You've got Charles Langat of Kenya in second, and then Daniel Kosson of Kenya in third place. On the women's side of it, he had the women's world record holder. She narrowly missed her previous world record by 5 seconds, running 29:19. And her name is Yahula. I don't know if that's quite how you pronounce it. And she's from Ethiopia, but a great run from her, beating the rest of the field by a solid 50 seconds. We had Jessica Kenlagat of Kenya in second, and Esther Bora of Kenya in third. Some standout performances from the race.
You can take it away.
Yeah, no problem. So we've got Jimmy Gressier. Obviously, we've got to mention him. He was the fastest European, and he ran 27:40 for 11th. How does that relate to his PB? It must be quite close, I reckon.
Reasonably close, but I think he's definitely run the European, he ran the world standard, didn't he, actually, which this year was 27:20 or 27:30. So he's definitely run under that. So, I don't know if he was particularly, well, I don't know if he'll be particularly pleased with it, but he's still fast.
Yeah. It's nice to see Andy Butchard racing again as well today. He was the fastest Brit in 28:07. So good run from him. You got an Irish runner here, Giddy?
Yeah, Ephraim Giddy. Yeah, really young lad. I think he's only around my age, maybe a slightly younger. He ran 27:57. I had the pleasure of racing with him in Luxembourg in the summer and got chatting to him a fair bit. And he's such a nice guy. Literally just lives for running. So I thought we'd give him a shout, because he has gone from just being a club runner in Ireland to progressing through. And then he came top 10 at Europeans, I think, with Ireland over the 10K, where he ran 28.01. So, and then another nice PB for him here, 27.57. So, yeah, great, great lad, Ephraim.
Breaking 28 minutes, that must have been on his mind.
Yeah, it's a nice time, that, isn't it? 27.57 is just sounds so much better than like 28.01.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Yeah, I love that. Samantha Harrison as well, obviously had a blinder of a run. She seems to just be going from strength to strength. She ran 30.51, fourth fastest Brit of all time.
That is insane.
Sixth overall, which, yeah, for a field of that caliber in a race that's fast, it's real quality performance from her. It's very good to see.
Yeah, Sam's stepping up to the marathon as well, which will be, and I believe that Ailish McColgan's also doing the marathon, is she? I don't know if she's announced formally or not, but I know she was supposed to be in the last London, wasn't she, but pulled out. So that's really good that the third and fourth fastest of all time over 10K are now going to step up to the marathon at the same time. And there's only, 10 seconds between their times, maybe even, 10, 15 seconds between their 10K PBs. So I think that'll be really good to see how different their marathon times end up, considering that their 10K times are only, 10 seconds apart, set, only a couple of months apart. So that'll be pretty cool on the women's side to see how that goes.
Who do you reckon would win it at the moment in the marathon? Samantha Harrison or Ailish McColgan?
It's difficult to say, isn't it? I think...
I hope Sam Harrison smashes her. That's why...
She's
the
got,
underdog story.
Yeah. She's got a better build for marathon running, right? Like, she's smaller, more compact, more traditional marathon runner type gait. Whereas, but you can never knock Ailish or count her out just because of how hard she seems to push herself in every single race. She's always gritting her teeth, legs and limbs and everything flying everywhere. So, it'll be
and
a good
look,
battle.
These girls ain't going to step up to the marathon unless they think they can do something good because they're both doing amazing stuff over the other distances. So why commit yourself to such a big task and put yourself out there from, Ailish won commies, didn't she? So it's kind of like, why would you go from being one of the top of the game at one event to move the goalposts and make it hard for yourself unless you really think you can do something good? So... I would imagine that they want to get one marathon done now so then they can peak in a few years once they've got the experience and the training. So whether we'll see something lightning fast straight away, I don't know. But it'll be good to have some good female Brits again up there.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
A couple of other names to mention. Victor Schmangs, Sweden's most stylish runner, ran 29.30 for a nice PB. He's got his sights set on sub 29 by the end of the year. So he's still got 30 seconds to knock off, but no doubt he'll definitely progress towards that. He's a solid runner. I've ran quite a lot with him out in Sweden. And also the Cambridge Stag Doers.
Yep, the Cambridge boys. Jonathan Ascanty Phillips is getting married. So they went out to Valencia for a weekend of shenanigans, of which one of them was the 10K race. And for lads that have gone out there and, haven't exactly been living religiously, should we say, over the last few days, they ran some solid times. Jep, if you look on his Strava, on Jep Strava, he's been injured and has barely been running at all. I think he did his first run back last week and he ran 29.54 or 29.57 or something. So his default settings must just be sub 30. That's just what the guy does.
Amazing.
Jack Gray, 29.19, basically finished. No, 29.20, I think, came in a second behind the winning female. And then Norman, who, in his own words, had a difficult start, which included falling over and taking a 4-foot woman with him. Finished just outside 30, but I think he managed to stop his watch during all the aggro because on his watch he's got himself down as 29.35 or something like that. So
He lost a lot of time there in that.
Yeah, and Ian, no idea what Ian was doing, probably just there for a good time, but he did run, so well done, Ian.
Good work.
Yeah.
Moving over to America quickly. We had the Houston half marathon and marathon today. The ladies took the limelight over there with Emily Sisson. Is that how you pronounce her name? I don't feel like...
Yeah.
Emily Sisson. She shattered the American record.
She's not listening.
In the half marathon. She's not. And she ran 106.52, which is, incredible. The first American woman to break 67 minutes for the half. Jess Judd was also over there for GB. And she ran 67.19 for third. And I've got written here in the show notes, almost as fast as me, Jess. If you're listening... She was 4 seconds off my PB, so she's still got a little bit of work to do there, but I'm sure she'll get it.
Tag it in.
and we also had the Tin Man Elite Boys. They raced the the Houston Half Marathon as well. A few half marathon debuts, I think, for Brian. If you're fans of the Tin Man Elites, they range from 63:41 for Jonathan Guzman, and Brian was in 64:29. And also Parker Stinson as well. Great run from him today. He was fourth in the, was it the marathon over?
Yeah, he ran the marathon.
I had to pop it in there just because Parker Stinson basically got me into running. Like, I don't know if any of you have seen the Trackstar videos on YouTube. It was like Sweat Elite before Sweat Elite was a thing. They were the first ever like running videos that I watched, and I watched them religiously over and over and over again. I bought the Saucony Kanvara 9s, the white noise pack, the all white colorways that almost sunk the whole brand because nobody bought them, but I bought them because Parker Stinson wore them. So yeah, it's just good to see him running well. I know he's had some issues with injuries and like mental health related stuff, so to see him come fourth in the marathon, good to see he's still trucking away.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, good lad, Parker. Two shout outs on a personal note from me in that race, in the half marathon, were Awet Yosef, who ran 62 something. I know it was good enough to be a Olympic trials qualifier for the marathon for the US. I had the pleasure of racing with him a couple of times over 5K when I was out in America. He's at Adams State, which is, if you don't know the NCAA system, it's a Division II school, which a lot of people would consider as kind of a weaker, not as good school, but just shows you how good you can bloody be to run 62-minute half marathon and quote-unquote not be at a good school. So well done to him. And then also Nacho, who is a Spanish guy who lives in Miami that's also coached by Aguila. When I went out to Miami in October, me and Nacho did a long run and a couple of sessions together, and he's just a funny guy. He's a complete loose cannon.
He sounds great already.
And he went sub-66 for the first time, and by his account, he had to absolutely smash it home in a sprint finish to just get under that. I think he literally ran 65, 57 or something like that. So yeah, well done Nacho for that, because he's absolutely buzzing. So well done to him.
Good stuff.
Just on the topic of marathons before we move on, I don't know if you boys saw the Boston Elite Fields got announced in their entirety this week. And I'm bloody excited for Boston. It looks incredible. Obviously Kipchoge is going to take the headlines, but there's quite a few exciting things in there. And Connor Mance, I'm excited about, just as a young gun who's, having his second crack at the marathon. He ran, 208 low on his debut? 208?
Yeah, I think it was the second fastest debut, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Chicago he did?
I think it was,
Yeah.
Or New York, maybe. One of the American majors, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I'm excited to see what he can do. And he ran Houston Half this morning. I think he ran 61:12 or something. But all of his training's on Strava. He's a bloody good follow on there. So he's probably in the thick of like a big week as well. So yeah, that should be good. And on the women's side, they got 9 sub-220 runners in the field, including Bariso, who won Valencia, Lona Salpeta, Jocelyn Jepkoskai, and Chet Karui. So that's going to be, a hell of a race. So excited for Boston, for sure.
And if you're not a running nerd and races and stuff, Boston's actually one that you can really get into, because unlike races where it's time orientated, time basically goes out the window because it's such a tough course. The wind, depending on what direction it's in, makes a massive difference, but also the rolling hills. So if you do know running, you're thinking someone like Connor Mance, the way he runs, like he should be so good at Boston because he's just a grinder. Like the hills are not going to get to him at all. But every year you see, it's always like CJ Albertson in recent times that goes out hard. Always someone does something weird, and it's quite a good watch. So it's pretty good. It's a pretty good one to watch when it comes around.
Mm-hmm. And over in Australia, we had the 10K cross country champs.
Have you been hiding that accent, Ben?
My Australian accent. It was pretty good, wasn't it? I should reach. Well,
he didn't run that by any of us before he did it. Just to clarify, that's completely off the cuff.
Yeah, it was. Sorry, guys. Anyway, we had the cross country over in Australia, and that was for the world. What is it called? World Cross Qualifiers. So basically, the athletes that come in the top three here got selected to run at the World Cross Country Champs. That was a really good watch. Did you guys see any of the coverage of that?
I saw the highlights.
Yeah.
What a course that looks like. It must have been.
It looks good. It's not what we would call proper cross country in a way. No, it's more not American style. Country,
yeah. Yeah.
It was fast though.
It's like golf course type conditions, wasn't it? But yeah, the men's on the men's side, we had a 1-2-3 for Rayner, Ramsden, and Brett Robinson. That's probably who we'd expect to come through the field from their side. Nice to see Brett as well running strong again after his marathon Australian record. And on the women's side, we had Olympian Rose Davies take the win. Leanne Pompiani, that is one of my favourite names in Australian distance running. And Catelyn Adams for third. That was a really good race to watch. So if you haven't seen that, go watch it. 10 kilometres of cross-country running out in Australia. And it was a 1-2-3 for the Nike boys out there.
Yeah, they have the short course as well. It's interesting because a lot of countries selection policies for this. So the World Cross is on the 18th and it's actually in Australia, which I think is why Australia will be wanting to select a pretty high caliber team, and why a lot of Australians would like to compete in home soil, like during a runner's career. It's so unlikely that you're going to get a major championship or a major cross country championship on your doorstep in front of a home crowd. So I think normally you probably wouldn't get that type of quality of people on there that have decided to go for it. Even people like Stewie McSwain, you'd think, why the hell's he bothering to do a 2K relay? Do you know what I mean? Like, he's one of the best 1500 meter runners in the world. But a chance, if it fits in with your training, a chance to go and do that on home soil is pretty cool. So, and I don't know if a lot of other countries have had their selections yet. I know the UK isn't sending a full senior team. The GB, rather, is not sending a full senior team. They're just sending certain individuals that meet the criteria and they think have a good chance of going out there. But they are sending a full relay team and a full junior team, so under 20s for men and women. And that was based off how you finished at the European Championships. So if you finished in the top 12, you were automatically selected. And then they had a race yesterday in Perth, which was the British Cross Challenge fourth race. And if you came in the top three, your name's thrown in the hat. It's not a guaranteed, but if you win that, you're basically all but there. So that was Ed Bird on the men's side, who I was racing with last week in Spain. And then Megan Harris, who also went to European champs. She won on the women's side. So they'll pretty much...
Big up Megan Harris.
Have booked their chance to go to Australia, which if you think about it, as like a 17-year-old kid, 16, 17-year-old, all your friends have probably thought, oh, you're the weird one that does cross-country. And then you've just gone off to Scotland, done a race, and you get to come back to school or college or whatever next week and be like, yeah, you know that race I did. I'm now going to Australia for 10 days.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
For free with GB to run this race. Like, that's pretty cool, isn't it? Like, I think...
Yeah, I
love it when opportunities like that come about, because cross country is not glamorous.
Yeah.
It's literally going to a muddy field in a place you've never heard of and having to run. But when you get a cool chance to go out to Australia or travel and do things like that, I think... You know, it kind of all pays off for a lot of these people. So good on everyone that did that.
Yeah, I just want to give a bit of a shout out to Megan Harris as well. She's a Chelmsford AC athlete, which is probably the biggest result that the club has had in a long, long time. That we've got some more talent within us, within the squad. But yeah, Megan Harris to take the win there and be on the plane to Australia. That's some big news for Chelmsford AC. So we don't often get much limelight. So I thought I'd chuck that in there.
Yeah.
Love that. Just quickly on that one as well, last thing on cross country, there's an Insight Running podcast, episode 267, if you're interested, where Steve Monaghetti goes into a lot of detail about the World Cross Champs and why it's such a special race, why he loved it so much. And I learned a lot from that one. It was really nice to hear some stories from it, and got me excited for this year's one coming up. So worth a listen if you're interested.
Lovely stuff. So that's pretty much it for the running news. Only final thing to mention is, I don't know if you guys have seen it, there's been a little bit of an uproar about Strava upping the price. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I think everyone needs to calm down.
Yeah, a little bit, 15% increase from $47.99 to $54.99. I mean, it's not that bad, is it? Let's be honest.
Well, you've got to think it depends on what the value the price per month for it is what, a couple of coffees?
Yeah,
and that's the way I always try and look at it. I get so much value from Strava, and I think the subscription is well worth it if you want to look into splits on your sessions, if you want to know how windy it was on your mile time trial. Like, there's so much that you get from that subscription.
Yeah,
that to be honest, like that sort of price increase compared to inflation with everything else, the just general cost of living, like they've got, you know, they're a business at the end of the day. They've got to make money. And I don't care.
No.
To be honest.
If you don't like it, there's a free option as well, isn't there? So like,
yeah, exactly.
It's not the end of the world.
A few things for me. One, no idea, Tom, but for some reason I didn't follow you, so I've just followed you on Strava. Second thing is, not to sound like a complete prick, but do you two not get your Strava for free for being like creators or having loads of followers or something like that? Or do you pay?
No, pay for it.
You need to get online, right? There'll be a form somewhere and you just fill it out. I'm seeing all these people that have got it for free. I've got it for free, so you need to get on it.
Easy stuff. Yeah. Get that little tick box next to your name.
You might get a tick. Yeah, I've got a double arrow, but you might get a tick because you do all YouTube and stuff, so maybe you will.
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm away off that, yeah. I'm gonna wait until I actually run well this year, and then I'll send in my application form.
Well, there's a few people that have got ticks that ain't running well, let me tell you that, but I'll just leave it at that. So there you go.
Lovely stuff. Right, moving on to some listeners' questions. This week we've got some quickfire questions from Instagram, just to spice it up a little bit. So we try and rattle through these nice and quick, and then we've got
let's be rapid with these. Yeah, like
yeah, no messing
no
about.
Explanation. Just give your answer.
Yeah,
nice.
So I'll read the question, and if Callum, you want to give your answer first, and then followed by Tom, is that gonna work? So the first one is: if you had to run a marathon in a non-plated shoe, what would you pick and why?
Invincible.
Solid.
It's a question about shoes, so it's going to be hard to answer it quickly. Superblast, I'd say.
Superblast.
Never heard of it. Can you give us the brand?
So the ASICS Superblast. Okay, because
I'd go ASICS Novablast, I think.
Okay.
So next question is trail running a waste of time?
Partially.
Partially? I think the answer's straight up no.
Okay.
No, definitely not. Definitely not a waste of time. Trail run is great if you like that sort of thing.
Next one is opinion on barefoot / zero drop running shoes.
Nonsense.
You're taking no prisoners with this. I think there's merit to it. There's some good zero drop brands out there, but don't become like a weird cult member who preaches zero drop shoes to everybody, because they won't work for the vast majority of people. But if you like them, you crack on in your outfits.
Fair play. That's exactly how I feel as well. There's a place for him, but for me personally, maybe I'm not going to make the switch straight to barefoot running or zero drop shoes. I'm quite happy with my usual 8 to 4 mil drop. That sort of works well for me.
If you're on the beach, you can run without your shoes. That's my opinion.
It's the only reason. How many miles would you recommend running in your super shoes before a race? That's quite an interesting one, actually.
Mm.
Tom, what do you reckon?
No, Callum's answering first, isn't he? We've got an order here.
Sorry.
Twice.
Not even a mileage.
No, just run twice. Once to check how they feel, and then a second time to check that the first time wasn't a fluke, and then you're good to go.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Solid I'd probably answer. Say the same. Either one big session or like two little ones.
Yeah. I think for me, I'd say mileage, no more than 50 miles, I think. Otherwise, after that, they start to deteriorate a little bit. But I think a lot of people, I know it's quick fire, but a lot of people say that shoes sort of wear out quicker than they do in terms of super shoes. I think you can probably get away with doing a lot more than you probably would think. One shoe to run for the rest of your life. Plot twist, no Nike.
Puma Deviate Nitro 2.
Ooh. I should say the Clout Monster, shouldn't I? But I'm going to say Novablast 3.
I'm going to go with Adios Pro 3. I need a super shoe.
Not sure about that. Does it have to be that one shoe for the rest of your life? You can't get multiple pairs. You just have to wear that same pair. Because if you've gone Adios Pro 3, you're going to be in danger after like 600-700 miles. But me and Callum will be laughing.
That's true. Might get some shin splints.
It's an ambiguous question. We need more detail in that one.
What? So all running I do for the rest of my life has to be in this one pair of shoes?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get some army boots or something.
Oh, dear.
And finally, for the Instagram questions, best running shorts.
Short running race shorts.
Yeah, easy peasy. Either the marathon shorts from Saw or the half tights, speed shorts, I think they're called.
Yeah, clean sweep for Saw. marathon shorts for me. Those pockets on the front are just game changers.
But if we're not talking racing, have you got a different answer if we're talking like just your favourite training shorts?
Yeah. I think they're called like sore training shorts or something.
No, yeah, my answer's the exact same. It's a sore.
I actually prefer the Say Sky half tights for my easy running. They're just a little bit more comfortable. And they've got a nice pocket for my phone in, so I'll probably end up wearing them a little bit more.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, right, so we take some email questions quickly.
Yeah, because me and Callum have got a bone to pick with one of these, haven't we?
Oh yeah, we got a lovely
it's
little.
About to get a bit sour. If children are listening, turn it off right now.
We've got an interesting one here. We got an interesting one here from Alex, and I read this message earlier, and I thought, shall we include it in the podcast or shall we not? But anyway, here we go. He says, "Hey gents, loving the pod so far. So a nice little intro." He said he's enjoying the podcast. But then he goes on to say, quick question for you, which is this really a question? Anyway, have Callum and Tom got braces or something since this started? Some very lispy content, which is great seeing as much as you talk about your sessions. All jokes aside, very informative, and I'll definitely be stealing some of the training tips. Also signed up for the Valencia half on your recommendation.
So a few things I want to address with this. First of all, thanks. It is a very informative podcast and I'm glad you enjoyed it. Second, right, it's not do we have braces, which would be arguably a bit normal. It's have we got braces since this started? So does that mean that the first episode was fine and we sounded normal and now we've developed a lisp as it's gone on? I'm not too sure. Yeah, that's a bit strange. But yeah, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Tom. How do you feel about your own voice and my voice?
Yeah, I'm unsure how to take this one, to be honest, because it takes you on a bit of a roller coaster, this email. It starts off so nicely. He calls us gents, very respectful. Thank you, Alex. And then it just, like, Ben gets left out of the equation completely. But I don't necessarily think we're more lispy than Ben. But he doesn't even mention Ben. And also, signing up to Valencia half on our recommendation, I think it was Copenhagen half, wasn't it, that we were waxing lyrical about?
Oh, yeah.
And even if it was Valencia, I hope it rains and it's really windy for you, Alex. Enjoy.
I might be fall over on the start line. I don't really.
That's a low blow.
I don't really.
That's a low blow. No, seriously, yeah. Alex, what I think would be really good for this is if we could revisit this in like 5 episodes time, seeing as though this is episode 5, send us another email with an explanation of like what you actually meant, if you see what I mean, a bit more detail, because I'd love to come back to this.
Mm. And what me and Callum will do... we'll invest in microphones as well. So I reckon that would be a good shout, to be fair, because it might just be a quality thing. It might just be that S's get a bit like compressed. So when we talk about sessions all the time, maybe just talking to our mobile phones it compresses it a bit too much. So let's look into that, Callum. Let's take Alex's criticism on board.
Yeah, interesting question, nonetheless. Okay, moving on to the next listener's question. It comes in this week from Matt. He's been running since 2007. He's had some fast time around 10 years ago, but then he's gone off and had kids. And his question is, how do you let go of old results and times/training paces and get your head in the right place to train again without always comparing yourself to the old times? I reckon, Tom, you might be a good one for this one, bearing in mind you've had a bit of an injury and you're coming back and you're not quite where you used to be. How do you let go of sort of your old times, your old paces? Get back to training.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's difficult because when I first started running, my progress was so linear, and I thought I was the dog's bollocks, to be honest, because every single race I did was significantly quicker than the last. Like I said earlier, like my 5K PB was like 16:10 or something like that. Was over 2 years ago, and if I raced the 5K tomorrow, I don't think I'd run that quick. And this was off no training. And the same with my first half marathon that I did was like 76 something, which isn't that far off what I ran over the summer. And so it's hard for me to look back at those times and think, why am I not like so much quicker now than I was then? And I think it's, you've got to factor in, you know, obviously you say you went off, you've had kids. That's a big deal because automatically the amount of energy that you've got in a day is, you haven't specified how many kids, but even one kid is bloody tiring enough for me. So it's that takes a lot of your energy. So you're automatically just not as you don't have as much to expend on your running. And so I think you've just got to let it go, to be honest. Like
let it go.
Been, probably watched a lot of Frozen, to be fair, with kids. But anyway, it's one of those where it doesn't sound like the, you know, you, PBs aren't unattainable now just because you ran faster 10 years ago. Again, I don't know quite how old you are, which makes it a little bit more tricky. But for me, I'm just trying not to compare to the old times and just trying to look ahead, focus on where I am now, look at the times that I want to run going forwards. And if I run the times that I want to run, they'll be so much faster than my old times that it kind of evens itself out and it will work out all right in the long run. But it is challenging. Like it's very hard mentally to think of yourself being quicker when you first started running compared to now when you know, 10 years later. So I feel your pain, but just keep on logging the miles and just look forwards. Don't look back.
Yeah, some good advice there.
I think you've answered that one well, Tom.
So should we go for one more listener's question this week?
Go on, Ed.
Yeah, go on.
We've got Killian, Dustin or Andrew. Who'd you fancy?
Just having a look at them, I think that Killian's is going to be quick to answer. So let's do Killian's, and I think we could actually also do one of the others because Killian's is going to be super quick.
Okay, so Killian, he started running 4 years ago and is in his mid-20s. Nowadays, he runs 5 to 6 times a week, currently training for a 1:25 half marathon. Despite all of his training, some rules of thumb simply don't apply to him. No matter how slow he runs his easy runs, his heart rate would never drop as low as yours. So on his easy runs as a percentage of his max, what would you suggest to lower heart rate whilst running?
So the reason why I think this is a pretty quick one is for everybody out there. Either if you're going to train with heart rate, I would suggest you get a heart rate strap for your chest.
Yeah.
Make sure that it's decent quality, that it syncs with your watch, and you need to wear it for a pretty decent amount of time to collect all the data to work out what your resting actually is, when it goes up and down based on, you know, if you've got kids, lifestyle changes, work, you know, what it is when you're doing different kinds of runs in different kinds of weather conditions, all that sort of stuff. If you truly want to purely based on heart rate, you need all that information. You need to make sure it's correct. Now, while heart rate can be a good guide, I think getting to that level of detail and accuracy is pretty unattainable for a lot of people, myself included. Therefore, don't take heart rate as the only kind of variable or measure that you can train on. So I would just strip it completely back to basics. I wouldn't compare your heart rate to anybody else because it's totally personal to you. And I would just think of it in terms of, can I speak when I'm on a run? So if you're running with somebody, can I get my words out? And if you want it to be a super easy run with low heart rate, it means that you can literally, you could say a whole paragraph of words with no break and you'd be absolutely fine. If you want to get into a, you know, a slightly more moderate pace, then it maybe means you could say a sentence, then you need to take a few breaths and then another sentence. And if you're thinking, oh, my heart rate's getting a bit high, then literally speak to yourself, sing some song lyrics, like do whatever you need to do to work out, okay, I'm going up a hill here and I can't speak, that means my heart rate's high. Just keep it super simple.
Yeah, spot on. Heart rate's so variable, isn't it, from one person to the next as well. I know people who are jogging at, like, you know, 120 beats per minute, and my jogging will be 140 to 150, and it's as easy. I'm speaking in full sentences, but it's just the way it is. So don't worry too much about it unless you're caning it on easy runs and your heart rate's astronomical.
Yeah. I think some really good advice there.
I think if I can do the last question, Bengts, I think you'll be actually the good person to answer this one.
Yeah, mate, go for it.
It applies to a lot to you. So Andrew's question is, I presume he's doing a marathon. Yeah, he is. So what's the most important thing to focus on? So that's his first question. And his second part is it important to get some races in your marathon training? And if so, how important is race practice? So I guess he's saying, what do you do, Ben, basically, in your marathon training for nutrition / diet?
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, I just mainly prioritize getting enough fuel on board. I think that's sometimes probably the most untalked about thing in marathon training is the amount of miles you're running. You're going to need to take on more fuel and energy than you usually would. So for me, it's just mainly making sure that I don't underfuel. So I like to have a lot of carbohydrates in my meals, keep up that veggies, and get a good amount of protein. I think for the difference between sort of marathon running and maybe sort of faster, shorter stuff like you do, Callum, is the amount of protein. I I do use protein in my diet, but it doesn't make up maybe as much of a component as maybe in your diet. Mainly due to just the amount of muscle damage you get from your sessions, it's going to be a little bit less due to the type of training. So for me personally, I like to prioritize stuff like carbohydrate and just make sure I'm getting enough fuel on board so that I'm not getting worn down and knackered towards the end of the session. So yeah, that would be my advice for nutrition.
I think as well, just quickly on that, conventional wisdom when it comes to nutrition kind of goes out the window when you're training for a marathon, because it's not a particularly normal thing for a human to do. So don't, if you know, like I spoke on the podcast about having like a random variety of sugary drinks straight after a long run and stuff. Like if that's what you need, if you feel like you need that, then I'll never drink. I haven't drunk any of those sorts of drinks since. I don't feel like I need them, but it felt like that's what my body craved in that moment. Just a really quick hit of sugar. So if you're craving donuts, then just eat some bloody donuts, but don't think too much about it, because if you are banging the volume, then you need to listen to your body and just get in those quick, easily digestible carbs.
Nail on the head, boys. Eat whatever you want when you're marathon training, whatever makes you happy and comfortable, and you're very quickly going to realize if it's damaging your performance, because your body's going to tell you. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, lovely stuff. So that's pretty much it for listeners' questions this week. We've got a few more there, but we'll dive into those next week. So thank you to everyone who's sent in questions. Just a reminder, you can submit your questions at runitthreewayspodcast@gmail.com. Just send them in there and we will rattle them off in either next week's show or the weeks that follow. But yeah, that's pretty much it for episode number 5. Wow, we've done 5 weeks. Can you believe it now? We've rattled off 5 episodes.
I know, it's more consistent than most of our training.
I think we've done really well. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Yeah
me too.
And if anyone's got any ideas about the podcast, we've got a few segment ideas that we're going to introduce, particularly Strava related. So make sure you keep your Strava in order, because you never know when you could get picked on. But if you've got any ideas or feedback, just like our friend Alex did, then let us know.
Yeah, we're very easy, aren't we? Like we're really just doing this for a bit of fun, aren't we? So
yeah, exactly.
If anyone has got any suggestions, anything that they'd like to hear or not like to hear, then let us know and we won't take it personally. I say that, we did take the Lisp comment quite personally. Anyway, what's coming up this week, Callum? What are you doing?
This week I've got a pretty normal week, to be honest, with sessions Tuesday, Friday, track session and a bit of a fartlek, and then I'm actually going to Prague on Saturday.
Lovely.
A bit of a holiday, nothing running related. So this week my mission is to try and look at where I'm staying and see if I can find a route for my long run on Sunday in Prague, which will be interesting. But yeah, what about you boys?
Yeah, go on, Ben. For me, I'm trying to build back towards those 100-mile weeks. That's when I find I get myself in proper marathon fitness, is when I start hitting those real high mileage weeks. So this week we hit, what was it, 140 kilometers. So if I can roughly hit around 150 160 for next week, I think that would be really good. And yeah, just making sure I keep that intensity in the right zones again, as I do this threshold training. I'm keen to just make sure I'm not overcooking it in those sessions. So like I did on that Thursday session, it was good to do a little bit of speed work, but yeah, I don't want to be doing that on Tuesday morning and knackering myself for the rest of the week. So try and build up towards 100 miles and keep the intensity in the right zone is my week.
Yeah, nice. I'm hopefully getting a bed and sofa delivered, because I moved in on Friday, but I've got absolutely no furniture to move in there. So I got the key, walked in, I had a suitcase full of running shoes, and that was basically the extent of what that's my assets. That's all I've got to my name, really. Lots of running shoes and an oven glove from Christmas. I won't forget that. But yeah, busy work week. So I'm away, work Monday, Tuesday. Going to be some hideously early morning runs, I think, at the start of the week. But apart from that, just continue to build the volume. Next week should be a bit bigger than this one, with some more sessions in the mix and a slightly longer long run. So yeah, looking forward to keeping that momentum going.
Lovely. Well, good luck with the furniture shopping there as well. It's exciting stuff.
It's been ordered. It just needs to actually be delivered so I can live in the place that I should be living in.
Sounds good. All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining me again for episode 5. We'll see you next week.
Absolute pleasure. Well,
see you soon. Absolutely. Bye.
See you soon. Nice one.
Cheers.
Goodbye.